So you all have been listening to these recordings, I'm sure. So you'll be wanting to put your names on these things, do a final check on them. And send them this away. Okay, so the name of the game, of course, is to match date and time. So make sure you can tell the AMs from the PMs. You put 10 PM next to January 27th, and this displays the sky. So the question is, how is this piece of the sky actually going to look? And there are a couple of ways of proceeding that we've talked about, and I think they're both equally good in some sense. One way is to find the piece of ground, and of course the horizon is the ground. Find the piece of ground that's closest to your constellation and put it right down. So here's the Big Dipper. If I put the piece of the ground that is nearest to it right here straight down, then I'm going to be drawing the appropriate picture. The other way, I'm sorry to say, I saw lots of you doing the following, and you put the pencil at zenith and you went over the constellation. You all see the error, I hope. That's not zenith, right? Zenith is in the center. So if I put your eraser on zenith and drape it over the constellation, what you see is the Big Dipper is nearly vertical. Nearly vertical. So you're going to see something kind of like that. Okay, so put the piece of ground below it, or the kind of more complicated story, pencil at zenith, which is not the celestial pole, drape it over the constellation, and then think of it like a telephone pole, let it go straight up. Questions? Okay, so you notice we didn't have a bunch of handouts today. That's because we've got what we need to work in lab. So it's time to start lab. So labs are next week, Monday or Wednesday. Bring all of these handouts to lab and hopefully it'll be clear, although the weather forecast I've seen shows cloudy. Either way, we're going to be out at the observatory doing as best we can with learning about the night sky. Cloudy or clear. We're going to start dealing with the moon relatively soon, so chapter 3 is the text that deals with that. We've got one more online tutorial to work with, latitude in your sky, and then as I said last time, we have an online quiz, which you may have already done, that would be fine, but it's due next time for the SC002. That's the one that looks like a polar projection as opposed to a Mercator projection. Questions? We've also reached, I think, the end of the vocabulary sheet. So sometime, maybe not next week, sometime we'll have a quiz that's similar to the online quiz dealing with all of these vocabulary words. We're going to have a lot of quizzes on what we call the culmination problem, and I hope we'll be talking about that today. But sometime we need to have a relatively long quiz on this vocabulary terms. So kind of the new ones had to do with locating the object in terms of the equivalent of latitude and longitude. So on the globe, latitude goes up and down, away from the equator. And the similar thing on the celestial sphere is called declination, and it goes away from the equator. On this sort of SCO2, the equator is out here someplace, so we're going up and down away from the equator on one of those lines. On the globe, longitude is going around from a particular zero point, which is arbitrary, but has become Greenwich, England. And the equivalent thing for the celestial sphere is right ascension. It increases this way, and it tells you the equivalent of longitude. It's measured in funny units. It's measured in units of hours, where 1 hour is 15 degrees. And we subdivide hours, of course, according to minutes and seconds. The arbitrary zero point is the intersection of the celestial equator and the equinox. And before, we had kind of a vague idea of what the equinox was, or what the ecliptic was. It was where the planets and the moon are generally found. But it has a precise definition that is accurate and unchanging, and that's the path of the sun over a year. So for millions of years, the sun has always been someplace along this path. More or less unchanging phenomena. And we delineate four standard locations in this path. So when the sun is on the exact same line as the celestial equator, since the celestial equator hits east and west exactly, that means that the sun will rise exactly in the east and set exactly in the west, and the diurnal circle that is the sun's daily orbit will be exactly split in half, and so we'll have equal amounts of daylight and sunlight. Daylight and night. If the sun is north of the celestial equator, then the sun will rise a little bit north of east, and it'll be more than half of the diurnal circle. So the sun will be above the horizon for more than 12 hours, and it turns out it gets higher in the sky when it's in that sort of situation. So the ultimate point is the solstice, when the sun is as high in the sky as it's ever going to be. We have as long days as possible, and that's the summer solstice. Sun goes back to the celestial equator on the fall equinox, and the sun continues to get lower in the sky until we reach the winter solstice, and we're back to the vernal equinox. And you really need to memorize this table that locates all of those points and times for the sun. So if you think about a spinning Earth, the thing that is a person's meridian is going to be rotating around through the sky with time. And what that means on a map like this is that exactly where your meridian is going to be advancing in this direction at a rate of 1 hour of right ascension per hour of time. So if we can figure out where to start, we can figure out where our meridian is at any old time. And there are kind of two ways to proceed. If you look at the bottom here, there are dates here that show where your meridian is at 8 p.m. So you can work your way forward, say for 9 p.m. or backwards for 7 p.m. to figure out where your meridian is on that map on any particular day. Absent this sort of map, what turns out to be a little bit better way of proceeding, and we'll be doing it with this kind of quiz problem working out, is to figure out where the sun is. So on this map, on the ecliptic, we have where the sun is on any old day. And if we know where the sun is, we know that the sun is on the meridian at noon. So if we know where the sun is, we can work forward to 1 p.m., 2 p.m., etc., and figure out what's going to be on the meridian at any old time. Okay. So kind of to remember all of that, remember that the M of AM and PM is the meridian. So in the AM, the sun is before the meridian. In the PM, the sun is after the meridian. So technically speaking, noon is M. The sun is on the meridian. And I'm not sure I mentioned it, but I do want you to have some idea of what the latitude and longitude is of St. John, St. Ben. So we're pretty close to 45 degrees. We're a little bit beyond 90 degrees. But roughly speaking, our location is 45 degrees latitude, 90 degrees longitude. Questions? So I'll point out might be an interesting public talk, not in any sense required to go to it, but so we're in kind of a funny, there are only a relative handful of astronauts, and one of them is from St. John's. So he's going to tell us kind of how he got from being a student at St. John's to having a spot in the astronaut corps. So he was a student of mine, 20 years ago, something like that. The other thing that I'm going to call your attention to, I'm not going to talk about it for a while, I think, is that picture. It's kind of my favorite picture from astronomy. And I'll let you think about what exactly it is. I will tell you the name of it. It's an analemma. And you may have actually seen this thing put on the side of globes. Pretty commonly it's put on the side of globes, that particular shape. Okay, so the starting point today is going to be to work out more and more details about how our sky works. So for some time I've been saying that the celestial north pole in our sky is about 45 degrees above the horizon. And how does that change according to where you are on the globe? So it turns out you might know that the state flag of Alaska has the Little Dipper on it. And that's because the Little Dipper is particularly prominent in Alaska because the North Celestial Pole is even higher in the sky in Alaska than it is in here. On the other hand, if you were to go to New Zealand, you wouldn't see the North Celestial Pole at all because it would be below the horizon. So what is a precise statement is if I draw the semicircle that is the meridian, right, the line in the sky from north to the North Celestial Pole through zenith and back through south. So here's north. Here's the North Celestial Pole, here's zenith, and here's south. The meridian would be crossing that someplace. What is always the case is that the altitude, the angle that the North Celestial Pole is above the north point, is equal to your latitude. So if you have a negative latitude, if you're in the southern hemisphere, that means the North Celestial Pole is going to be below the horizon, and then kind of automatically, the South Celestial Pole is going to pop up above the horizon in the south. Okay, so the altitude of the North Celestial Pole is equal to your latitude. What has to be the case, of course, is that the celestial equator has to be perpendicular to the pole, so the celestial equator is going to cross the meridian at a point kind of like that. And if you just do the math, you'll see that the angle that the celestial equator misses zenith by is also equal to your latitude. So for us, the celestial equator is going to cross the meridian towards the south. If we were in the southern hemisphere where the latitude is negative, then the celestial equator would cross the meridian to the north. So we should generally think about the sun, since it's generally speaking close to the equator, as being generally in the south part of our sky. Whereas if you go to the southern hemisphere, the sun, since it's close to the celestial equator, will be generally speaking in the north part of the sky. Of course, it does going to rise in the east and set in the west. So where exactly is the sun on any particular day? How high does it get in the sky? So I hope you've noticed that in the winter, you have very long shadows and the sun doesn't get very high in the sky. It tends to be in your eyes because it's close to the horizon. Whereas in the summer, it's pretty much right overhead, so a baseball cap will easily put your eyes in the shade. So we can figure out where the sun is on any given day if we go to this sort of map, right? Because this says where the sun is on any given day. And if we figure out the declination, the angle that that sun is from the celestial equator, we can just plot that location on this picture. So let's pick some kind of standard dates. If we consider the summer solstice, the sun is going to be 23.5 degrees above, which is to say towards the north, of the celestial equator. And here at St. John's, where our latitude is pretty much 45 degrees, we can figure out the altitude that the sun has when it's culminating by just doing the math. Right? So if this is 45 degrees, then this is 45 degrees. And therefore, the altitude of the sun on the summer solstice here at St. John's is going to be 45 degrees plus 23 and a half degrees, which is to say 68 and a half degrees. Okay, so the sun doesn't go through zenith for us. It never goes, it's never right overhead. But it does get within 21 and a half degrees of zenith on the summer solstice. On the other hand, on the winter solstice, when the sun is as low in the sky as it's ever going to be, then it's 23 and a half degrees below the celestial equator. So under those circumstances, its altitude is going to be 45 degrees minus 23 and a half degrees, right, or 21 and a half degrees. So roughly speaking, the sun is three times higher in the summer than it is in the winter. So it has a huge effect on the how much light we get and the effect of that light. Because if you think about it, if the sun is close to the horizon, then the sun's light is going to be distributed over a relatively large area. Where if the sun is directly overhead, that same light will all be concentrated on a smaller area. There are really unfortunate words, I think, to describe this process. And I don't like these words, but they're commonly used. When the sun is coming in at an angle, people call that indirect. I don't know what's indirect about it, but that's the word that's usually used. When the sun is right overhead, that's usually called direct. I really dislike that terminology because I don't think those words have any particular meaning to me. But the idea is that if the sun is close to the horizon, the sun's light is going to be stretched out over a big long area, and so its heating effect will be less.
Is that due to the tilt of the Earth, correct?
So you're saying why do we have this changing position? So, first of all, let me kind of repeat a common confusion that I think I had from my grade school teachers, and that is that the Earth's tilt is wobbling, is changing with time. Okay, is that something that you guys have picked up or not? Good, because it's not true, right? The sun, our axis of rotation is always pointing at the pole star, so it's pretty much pointing in a fixed direction. So if we look at the difference between summer and winter, so here's the sun, and here's the Earth, and here's the axis that is pointing at Polaris, and 6 months later, here's the axis that's pointing at Polaris. So here, of course, is the equator, and here we are at St. John's at roughly 45 degrees above the equator. And you can see that we've got nearly direct sunlight shining on us. The sun is going to be pretty close to zenith, 21 and a half degrees from zenith. Whereas in the winter, here's the equator, here we are, and now that sunlight is coming at an angle that's close to the horizon, so it's going to be more indirect. So yeah, this phenomena of the changing declination of the sun has to do in the end with the tilt of the Earth, the constant tilt of the Earth's axis. So there's a famous documentary that interviews Harvard graduates with their gowns on. They're just about to get their degrees, and the interviewer asks these people, "What's the cause of the seasons?" And you get every possible imaginable wrong answer from these soon-to-be Harvard graduates. So what is the cause of the season? Why is it hot in the summer and cool in the winter?
We're closer to the sun.
No, That's the wrong answer.
Really? More direct angle?
So first of all, to be specific, we're actually closer to the sun in the winter than we are in the summer. Yep, by millions of miles. But millions of miles is nothing out of 100 million miles that separates us from the sun. So yeah, we're slightly closer in the winter than we are in the summer, but it's really making a very small effect. But to the extent that it does anything, of course, it's going to make our winters a little bit warmer. But yes, we are closest to the sun in the winter. So I think I heard another answer. Yeah, so during the summer, the sun is above the horizon more, and the sunlight is more direct, and all of those things are going to give us better heating. But there's something that maybe worries you a little bit about that, because for sure, the longest day and the most direct sunlight is going to happen on 21 June. And the least direct and the shortest day is going to happen on 21 December. But you know that 21 December is not the coldest day of the year. And you know that 21 June is not the warmest day of the year. Everything's lagging a little bit, right? The coldest day of the year might be 21 January. And the warmest day of the year might be 21 July. So what's happening there? Well, that's the same story as the turkey, right? You put the turkey in the oven and you set the oven to 350 degrees. The turkey doesn't go to 350 degrees immediately. It takes some time for it to warm up and cool off. So it's not so much for the rays of the sun, but for the action of the sun. So the Earth will be heating up all of this time due to the action of the sun, but it won't reach its maximum temperature until we're starting to not heat it as much. So you can imagine you take your turkey in the oven and you start changing the thermostat on the oven. And the temperature that the turkey is at is always going to lag with the temperature that you've set the oven for. So our warmest day is going to come a little bit after June 21, even though the heating effect of the sun is going to be maximum on 21 June. There's another not uncommon misperception that has to do with the distance from the sun. So when I said that the Earth is closest to the sun on January 4th, I was, of course, actually talking about the distance between the center of the sun and the center of the Earth. And I think some people think that if you look carefully, this guy here is slightly closer than this guy here. Basically, because this guy is kind of up more towards the pole than that guy is. Is that a significant difference? So this guy is probably maybe a thousand miles closer than that guy, other things being equal. But that's 1,000 miles out of 100 million miles. It's nothing. To the extent that anything counts, the fact that the centers are closer by a couple of million miles during the winter should count for a lot more than that. And that has no noticeable effect, right? We don't get out our suntan lotion on December 21 when we're particularly close to the sun. Okay. So we've been concentrating on the sun, but most of our quizzes will deal with these same sorts of questions about other sorts of stars. So let's ask the question, as I will next time, how high will a star get in the sky for a particular location? What's the altitude when it culminates? So let's take a look at this. In order to answer this question, it's going to depend where you are on the globe. So I'm going to need to specify my location. So let's pick a star, pick a location, and see if we can answer this question. So kind of a pretty famous star is Betelgeuse here. There's a movie more or less by that name. And it has a declination of about plus 8 degrees. And let's do this from Memphis, which has a latitude of 35 degrees. So how high will Betelgeuse be in the sky when it culminates? So the starting point for this is to draw this semicircle that is the meridian, the line in the sky that goes from north of the north celestial pole through zenith and back through south. So here's north, here's the north celestial pole, here's zenith, and here's south. And here I am standing directly under zenith. What is going to be the case, what is always the case, is that the altitude of the north celestial pole is equal to your latitude, 35 degrees in this circumstance, and the celestial equator, being perpendicular to the pole, has to miss zenith by 35 degrees. The star Betelgeuse is just 8 degrees from the celestial equator, 8 degrees towards the north celestial pole. And once I've made that drawing, it should be just adding and subtracting numbers until I get the altitude. So remember, the altitude is the angle to the nearest horizon, which is in this case the southern horizon. If Betelgeuse were even closer to the pole, you know, say over here someplace, then the closest horizon would be the north horizon. Okay, so there are any number of ways to work it. Kind of what I see immediately is to calculate this angle here, and then since zenith is a right angle, I can subtract that from 90 degrees. But there are lots of ways of working it. So this angle here, I went 35, but I came back 8. So that angle should be 35 less 8, or 27 degrees. And so this angle here should be 90 less 27, or 63 degrees.
Why did you minus 8 instead of add 8?
Well, because it takes 35 to get to the celestial equator, right? And I have to come back towards the pole 8.
Oh, okay.
So it has to be less than 35 degrees. There's nothing special about working it that way. Another way of working it would be to calculate this angle and then add 8 to that. Right? This angle here I could calculate because it's going to be 90 degrees less 35 degrees. And then I need to add 8 to that to get the same answer, 63. So there are lots of ways you can work this problem. The idea is that once you've drawn the picture, you can come up with your own way of finding that altitude. Well, let's ask kind of a related question. If the sun is directly overhead on the summer solstice, what's your latitude? So if we draw that same picture, so here's north, here's zenith, and here's south. And the sun, apparently, is at zenith. And we know that on the solstice, the sun is 23.5 degrees from the celestial equator. And we also know that the celestial equator misses zenith by your latitude. So the latitude at which the sun would be directly overhead on the summer solstice is 23.5 degrees. If you think about it, if we were closer to the equator than 23.5 degrees, let's say that we were 20 degrees from the celestial equator, or 20 degrees from the Earth's equator, then that means that on this day, so if this was 20 degrees, then the sun would be a little bit past zenith. Right? But that would mean that there would be a day a little bit before the solstice and a day a little bit after the solstice at which the sun would be directly overhead. So where would the sun be directly overhead on the winter solstice? Yeah, it better be in the southern hemisphere because the seasons are reversed, of course. Incidentally, this is another way of remembering that the cause of the seasons is not the changing distance that the Earth is from the sun, right? Because if it were, then the southern hemisphere and the northern hemisphere would move together closer to the sun or further from the sun. So if the sun is directly overhead on December 21, so here's the sun, and we know that the sun has a declination of minus 23.5 degrees, then this must be the picture, right? The north celestial pole is someplace there below the horizon. The south celestial pole has to be up there, and we're in the southern hemisphere at a latitude of minus 23.5 degrees.
So if you're on the equator, that's why they say it's, I guess, on Earth, one of the warmest places on Earth, because you have the most direct sunlight throughout the year, and then that sun is going to vary between, 23.5 degrees and negative 23.5 degrees from the zenith if you were standing there.
Yeah, so if you're at the equator, so that the celestial equator goes right through zenith, then the sun might be this way, it might be that way, but it's always pretty close to zenith. When will it be exactly at zenith? Well, when the sun is on the equator, right? Which would be the equinoxes. So if you kind of put together what we've said, the sun is never directly overhead any place that's north of 23.5 degrees. Between plus 23.5 degrees and minus 23.5 degrees, sometime during the year, typically twice a year, the sun is going to be directly overhead. And south of minus 23.5 degrees, the sun is never going to be overhead again. So it's helpful to have names for these various locations, and that's the tropics. So the tropics are defined to be the region between plus 23.5 degrees and minus 23.5 degrees. So these are latitudes I'm talking about. A latitude of plus 23.5 degrees is called the Tropic of Cancer. And a latitude of minus 23.5 degrees, it's called the Tropic of Capricorn. Those are constellations which are kind of close to where the sun is on these various locations. Okay, so where can you be in the United States and have the sun directly overhead? Pretty much no place. It turns out that a very southern island around Hawaii is below 23.5 degrees, but not any of the major islands of Hawaii. So approximately speaking, no place. Every place in the United States is north of 23.5 degrees, except this one little spot. Okay, so you always have a shadow if you're living in the United States, right? The sun is never directly overhead, so you would cast no shadow.
Wouldn't it be Key West?
No, Key West is, we could look it up on a map, but it is definitely north of 23.5 degrees. It's a little bit close. It's maybe it might be as close as 25 degrees, but it's definitely out of the tropics. Sun doesn't go directly overhead at Key West. And there's an island that's even west of Key West that's not inhabited, and it's still not in the tropics. I think, I've been told, the only spot in the United States, the only part of a, you could count the Virgin Islands maybe, the only state of the United States that is any part that's in the tropics is this non-major island of Hawaii. All the big ones are still out of the tropics. Where would you have to be in order for the sun to be above the horizon 24 hours a day? Say on the summer solstice. You know that that happens, right? So if you're on the North Pole, let's think about what's going to happen there. If you're on the North Pole, then the North Celestial Pole is straight up. And that means that the celestial equator is going to be right at the horizon. So anytime the sun is north of the celestial equator, it's going to be above the horizon. So for 6 months, between here and here, the sun has a positive declination, and so it would be above the horizon. So at the North Pole, the sun would very gradually spiral up, you know, over 3 months, and then very gradually spiral down over 3 months, and then it would set for 6 months.
Isn't it dark over there for like 48 hours?
Say again?
In Alaska, don't they have no sun for 48 hours?
Well, if you're at the North Pole, of course, you're going to have darkness for 6 months. So how far could you go and have long, long periods of darkness? Well, let's ask it in a positive sense. How far could you deviate from the North Pole and still have one day of 24-hour sunlight? So let's kind of draw the picture. So if we're not at the North Pole, then the North Celestial Pole isn't going to be at zenith, but it's going to be up high someplace. Let's work her out. And so the celestial equator is going to be someplace like there. And of course, there's the other side of the celestial equator, which usually we don't worry about because it's below the horizon. And so this angle here, which is the complement of this angle here, this is the angle that you are from the North Celestial, that's the angle that you are from the North Pole. Right, kind of the 90 degrees minus your latitude. And that's the same thing as this angle and the same thing as that angle. So if we're right at the North Pole, we've said that the celestial equator matches your horizon. So on June 21, the sun has a declination here of plus 23.5 degrees. So here at noon, the sun is going to be above the horizon at this location. If we follow that around on a diurnal circle, the sun is going to be here at midnight. So if this angle is less than 23.5 degrees, that sun will still be above the horizon. During that day, the sun will have kissed the north point on the horizon, will have reached some angle, turns out it's about 47 degrees, and then it'll kiss the north horizon again on a tilted circle. So in order for that to happen, we need to be within 23.5 degrees of the North Pole. So it's a latitude of 66.5 degrees or more. So that's called the Arctic Circle. So any place inside the Arctic Circle, you're going to have one of these days that's longer than the sun is going to be above the horizon for more than 24 hours. And of course, the same thing applies to the southern hemisphere. So these are the Arctic circles and the Antarctic circles. And if you look at any globe, they're typically going to have these circles labeled on it. Okay, questions? So that's half of the question that I'm probably going to ask next time. The other question I'm going to ask is, when does this star culminate? What time of day? And that's a question that's easily answered with your star finder, but I'm not going to let you use your star finder for it, right? You could put that star on the meridian and be all set. But we'd like to be able to do it without benefit of additional equipment. In order to answer this question, you know that the time of culmination depends on the date. So I have to specify the date. And I think to answer this sort of question, even if you don't have an SCO-01, it's helpful to think about an SCO-01 being present. So if I, again, let's pick Betelgeuse, let's pick a date that is, well, let's pick an easy date first, 21 December. So here is Betelgeuse, and it has a right ascension that is a little bit short of 6 hours, say 5 hours, 50 minutes. And we know where the sun is, right? The sun is right there. Oops. It's right there if it would stick. And we know the sun is above the is on the meridian at noon. So we know at noon our meridian is here, and we just have to count the number of hours it takes for the meridian to swish by Betelgeuse. Right? Because you can remember thinking about the spinning Earth, your meridian is a plane that is sweeping across various stars. And it's going to go through a full circle in 24 hours. So 1 hour of right ascension per hour of time. So all we really need to do is to count up the number of hours between the location of the sun, the right ascension of the sun, and the right ascension of Betelgeuse. And it may seem like kind of a long way to do that simple calculation, but I recommend making a table that looks like as follows. So we're going to put the time of day here, and we're going to put the right ascension that's on the meridian. And the starting point is the sun. So we know that the sun, along with its right ascension, is on the meridian at noon. What is the right ascension of the sun on December 21? Well, we can go to this table. It's 18 hours. So all you have to do is go forward in time at a rate of 1 hour of right ascension per hour of time until I reach Betelgeuse. So for example, at 1 p.m., 19 hours is going to be on the meridian. At 2 p.m., 20 is going to be on the meridian. At 3, 21 is going to be on the meridian. 4, 22, 5, 23, 6, 24, which is the same thing as 0. And now we've got 7 p.m. is going to be 1, 8 p.m. it's going to be 2, 9 p.m. it's going to be 3, 10 p.m. it's going to be 4, 11 p.m. it's going to be 5, 12 p.m. it's going to be 6, and we've gone too far. So it's going to be, to reach 5:55, it's going to be 11:55 p.m. Excuse me, 11:50 p.m. Okay, so let's take it all from the top. So let's pick a location, let's pick a star, let's pick a date, and let's see if we can answer all of these questions. So the first question is, what's going to be the altitude when this star culminates? And the second question is going to be, what time of day is this going to occur? And what we need to specify is the location of the star in terms of its right ascension and its declination. And what we need to specify about our location is the latitude. Turns out that the longitude doesn't matter. And we also have to pick a date. And I'll always pick a date that is a 21. Because those are the simple sort of possibilities. So If I can find my glasses, I can pick another star. So, what's another somewhat famous star? Well, Vega's a very prominent star in the summer skies, and it has a declination that looks like it's about 39 degrees. And it's got a right ascension that is, I would say, 1835. And we picked a spot that was south of us last time, so let's pick a spot that's north of us this time. Let's say Canada, where the latitude is 50 degrees. And for a date, this star is prominent in the summer skies, so let's pick July 21. Okay, so first part of the question is find the altitude, and the way we want to do that is by drawing the meridian, the line in the sky that goes from north to the north celestial pole through zenith and back through south. So here we are sitting under the dome of the sky. Here's zenith, here's the north spot, here's the south point. And since we're in Canada, the north celestial pole is going to be relatively high, right? It's going to be 50 degrees above the northern horizon. And the celestial equator, it goes east-west, so it has to cross the meridian at some point. And it's going to cross the meridian at an angle that is our latitude from zenith. This star is 39 degrees towards north. And we want to find the altitude, which is the angle above the nearest horizon, which is, again, in this case, the southern horizon. We want to find this angle. And I hope once you've got this drawing, you can kind of figure everything out, because there are lots of individual ways of doing it. And let me comment that there is no formula. There are enough cases that are possible with positive declinations, negative declinations, things that are closer to the northern horizon than the southern horizon. There isn't a formula that you can memorize that will, in fact, cover all of those cases. So you really have to draw the picture and then figure out what the corresponding angle is. So I don't know, what I see kind of immediately is this angle here, right? Because I went 50 and I came back 39. So I can do that one in my head, that's just 11 degrees. And since this is a right angle, 90 degrees, this angle here has to be 90 minus 11, or 79 degrees. When? What time of day? Well, this is one I can check my answer if I want to on my star finder. But let's go at it straightforwardly. So the first thing I need to figure out is where the sun is.
8 hours.
Right. So it's not on this table. But you can see that if the sun is going to go through 24 hours of right ascension in 12 months, it's moving at the rate of 2 hours per month. So if it was at 6, it's now at 8. That's why I'll always pick 21s for you. And so here is the location of the sun. There's Vega. I have to wait for my meridian to sweep by that star. And I've already told you it's going to happen in the evening. Okay, so if I make the little chart, so we've got the time of day, and we've got the right ascension that's on meridian. The starting point is noon because we know its right ascension is 8 hours. And all you have to do is go forward. You can go backwards too if you want. We need to go forwards or backwards until we get this answer on the meridian. So 1 is going to be 9, 2 is going to be 10, 3 is going to be 11, 4 is going to be 12, 5 is going to be 13, 6 is going to be 14. 7 is going to be 15, 8 is going to be 16, 9 is going to be 17, 10 is going to be 18, and 11 is going to be 19, and we're a little bit past it, right? So we want to get to 8:35, so that's going to happen at 10:35 p.m.
So if each month is like 2 hours, would it be fair to say that, you know, the sun moves every day by like, what, 4 minutes?
Yes, precisely. More questions? So I don't know, this is complicated enough that seeing lots of examples helps. It's kind of boring for me to do the examples, maybe boring for you to listen to them. So there are screencasts that go through lots of examples. So if you go to the website, there's something called lectures.mp4s, and if you do that, you'll see lots of things that are called culmination problem that goes through, I don't know, maybe a dozen examples as a screencast. Questions? So we'll do lots of quizzes on this, and I think we might as well start doing them next time. And by the end, if this class is like other class, lots of you will have trouble at the start, but with lots of examples, you'll get it right in the end. And given that, I'll start out with low point quizzes and we'll have high point quizzes by the end. And what I promise you is that this will be a 10-point question then on the exam, which is, I don't know, a couple of weeks away or something like that. Well, I think I want to give you some hints about this picture.
Is it the sun?
So the dot is the sun. So this picture was made by an amateur astronomer in Boston, maybe way before digital technology. So that's one of the things that made it interesting, is that it was kind of a hard technical problem to do. And approximately speaking, what he did is he had the camera in a fixed location, so he never changed its location during the year, and he took a picture every Sunday, say, at 9 a.m.
So the middle one would be when they cross over at the equinox, then the short little one would be the winter solstice and the far one summer solstice.
So they're, you're two-thirds correct. So one is really, so let me first of all write the name of this thing down. This is an analemma. And I've said that what it is it's the location of the sun at a particular time. And it looks like this kind of figure eight figure. And I told you that you typically see this plastered on globes. And it's typically plastered on between the Tropic of Cancer and the Tropic of Capricorn. And that means, of course, that the equator has to look kind of like that. So you're always drawn to this spot. I mean, that's kind of what your eye picks out. But let me tell you, there's nothing particularly special at that point. That's not the celestial equator. The celestial equator has to be evenly divided between where the sun is on June 21 and where it is on December 21. So one of these days here is probably the equinox. So, and of course the lines are cases where he left the aperture open while the sun rose. In the other situations, he just had a dot. He just took a normal short exposure for the sun. And of course, if you're ever going to properly expose the sun, you're not going to properly expose anything else. So some other time, with the camera still in its fixed location, he took a normal exposure of the region around it. Because if you properly expose the sun, you're probably going to use a 10,000th of a second or something like that on your camera. And a normal sort of exposure might be a 60th of a second if you want to capture the rest of the stuff. So this took a lot of persistence. And one of the interesting things, when this thing was published, there were actually two versions of it were published. There was the version that he had the previous year, which didn't fit. He hadn't calculated things correctly, so the top of the analemma wasn't in the photo. And then he did it again. And of course, you have to wait, right, a year before you develop that film. And then he did it again the next year and got it right. So what all can we learn from this to check out these statements? So you all have said that this has to be summer solstice and this has to be winter solstice. And notice that there's evidence for that. Because here, when the sun is rising, it gets blocked off by the leaves of this tree. Because there are leaves on that tree on June 21. If you look here in December 21, sun isn't blocked out because there aren't leaves on that tree on December 21. So I claim that this occurred in Boston, and we can check that that's kind of a right statement, because you remember that if we were to look at the celestial equator, looking west, for example, it goes up at an angle that tells you your latitude. If we're at the angle that the celestial equator misses zenith by is your latitude. So if you're on the celestial equator, if you're on the Earth's equator, then the celestial equator goes straight up. And we've said that if you're at the North Pole, the celestial equator is at the horizon. So that angle is basically your latitude. And you can see that angle is, I don't know, 40, 45 degrees, right? Pretty right for what it would be in Boston. So when the sun has a positive declination, it's going to be high. When the sun has a negative declination, it's going to be low.
Could it be negative
45? Not if it's sunrise. It would have to be sunset then. So there's something else going on here, though. Because I think if you had guessed what this picture would look like beforehand, you would say that at noon, the sun should be on the same hour circle any old time, right? I've said that all the time. The sun is going to be on the meridian at noon. But here we have sometimes the sun is a little bit ahead, and sometimes the sun is a little bit behind from where it would normally be at 9 a.m. So this is called the equation of time. And what the equation of time says is that sundials can't work perfectly, because sometimes the sun is a little bit ahead of its position and sometimes it's a little bit behind its position. It's not a huge amount. It's kind of like by plus or minus 15 minutes. So why is that? So that says that the sun doesn't have an even motion. Sometimes it must move a little bit faster in order to get ahead, and sometimes it must be moving a little bit slower in order to get behind.
Is it because it varies by, roughly 4 days, technically, and then if you go off, you have 365 days, roughly, in the year, which isn't precisely?
So, as you know, it's like 365 and a quarter, but I don't think that has any important effect on this. So you can, this same analemma you can see inscribed on Greek monuments that are 2,000 years old. So it's kind of a well-known phenomenon. It doesn't change over that sort of time. It turns out over millions of years, the shape of the analemma changes for reasons that maybe will eventually become clear. So I commented that the Earth is closer to the sun sometimes than other. The path of the Earth around the sun is quite circular, but it's not exactly a circle. It varies by a few percent. And that the sun is closest to the Earth at about that time, a little bit past the solstice. And it turns out that when the sun is close to the earth, or the earth is close to the sun, the motion is faster than it is at other times. So I'll talk about this in great detail at some point. This is one of the famous dead physicist Kepler's discoveries, this change in speed of the orbit. It kind of makes sense. When the earth has fallen closer to the sun, it's moving a little bit faster, and so the apparent position of the sun is a little bit faster during that location. So that's about half of what's going on. If you think about how something like that would occur, that wouldn't make a figure eight figure. It would make something more like a circle, because it would mean that the sun is moving fastest here, and 6 months later it's moving slowest. It wouldn't cause the double period that's required in order to make a figure eight. So, kind of seem to ask an unrelated question. Where can you go, and in one step, you can cover 90 degrees of longitude all at once? At the pole, right? So this is a map of the celestial pole, but it would apply just as well to our pole. If I'm very close to the pole, I can just step over it, and I can have a huge change in my longitude. So if the sun were moving at a constant pace, the change in its right ascension would automatically be more in this situation than in that situation. And for two reasons. First of all, if the sun were moving at a constant pace here, it's angled, so it's not making a full change in its right ascension. Some of it's going into changing its declination. Up here, not only is it going in the right direction, but also a single step will carry it through more right ascension than it would if it were at the celestial equator. So this is a phenomena that happens twice per year, and it's actually the cause of the figure eight sort of thing. So if the sun moved at an exactly even pace, then the figure eight would be exactly symmetric, and the center point would be the celestial equator. But because the sun is not moving at an exactly even pace, because the distance between the earth and sun varies, that moves the magic point off the celestial equator. Okay, so sundials can't read exactly accurately. Because the sun doesn't move at an exactly even rate in terms of its right ascension. But, I don't know, 15 minutes doesn't seem like a lot. I'll say yes. Okay, so the saga continues.